Hello, rap fans. It's Richard Herring here. Thank you for listening to my podcasts, powered by Acast Plus. Do tell your friends if you think they might enjoy them too. And do come and see me on tour in my show, Can I Have My Ball Back? Go to richardherring.com/ballback/tour for all tour dates, going to lots of places in the UK. Some extra gigs added in London at the Leicester Square Theatre and the Bloomsbury Theatre. The Leicester Square Theatre first gig is very nearly sold out, so do rush along to those shows, London, if you want to come along. Some of the shows selling fantastically well, some of them selling pretty badly. Hello, Swindon. Do you know I'm coming to your town? Please buy some tickets. And I do have to give a trigger warning. I've done the show only a few times and 6 men have passed out. After the bit where I explain what happens to you during an operation for testicular cancer. So, are you man enough to handle my balls? Only come if you are, have lots of balls and are not scared of balls. There is some mild testicle trauma involved in this story of testicular cancer. It's mainly funny, though, and if you don't come, that means you're scared to come, and I'm going to judge you, so... It's like going on a fairground ride, so do come along. It's going to be very exciting to see if you make it through. I'll give you a badge if you make it through unscathed. Anyway, come and see the tour, richardherring.com for all that news. Some great Rahalastapas coming up, I have to tell you, in the next few weeks. The tour was a lot of fun. Thanks very much to everyone who came. Sit back, relax, and enjoy my stupid fucking podcast.
Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
Here's a cool fact. A crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Another cool fact, you can get short-term health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans are designed for people who are between jobs, coming off their parents' plan, or turning a side hustle into a full-time gig. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. Get more cool facts about UnitedHealthcare short-term plans at uh1.com.
Hi, and welcome to another episode of Rich Herring's Leicester Square Theatre podcast. We've got Robert Webb on this week. Beat that if you can. No, you can't. I didn't think so. So, hey, look, we're starting a new series of the podcast. We're starting the recordings on October the 16th. It's every Monday until November the 27th. You can buy tickets if you can get to London and to Leicester Square at leicestersquaretheatre.com or go to richherring.com/gigs and you can see all the links, and the guests will be put up there as soon as I can be bothered to do it. We have got some fantastic guests coming up, including Ellie Taylor, Armando Iannucci, John Maloney, Jan Ravens, Alice Lowe, I hope, Reg D. Hunter, Richard Osman, and hopefully people like Charlie Brooker and Paul Chowdhury, and some more on top of that. So it's going to be well worth coming to see, regardless of who you get. It's always good fun. We record 2 a week. Don't tell anyone I told you. And remember, there is an app. If you go to the iOS Apple App Store, then you can download Rich Herring's Leicester Square Theatre podcast Emergency Questions, which is free, and you get some free questions, and then you can buy extra packs if you want to, including all the questions in the first Emergency Questions book, and then 100 new questions about dating, and 100 new questions for dating, and 100 new questions that will be suitable for children, as long as they don't mind you saying poo. And you can turn off the adult questions, hide them away while you're playing with it with your children, so you don't ask them who they'd like to be in a human centipede with. But you might get some interesting answers if you do. Anyway, go to richherring.com and you can find out all the details of pretty much all of this. LeicesterSquareTheatre.com. I hope to see you at one of the shows. Here's Robert Webb.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to the Leicester Square Theatre. Please welcome a man who has recently irked Michael Portillo. It's Richard Herring! welcome to Rich Herring's Leicester Square Theatre Podcast. I was following the Hofmeister Bear the other day. It's a pretty cool guy. Got a hat and everything, hasn't he? He calls it relentless. I don't know that of this. Don't know if that's going to catch on. It's been a very busy week for me this week. I'm so busy I might have to talk about some of it in next week's show. That is how far ahead we have to look when I turn 50 on Wednesday, was it? I don't know. On Friday I moved house. So it's like, you know, it's sort of, I was living in London. I got to 50. Someone said, are you still here? You've got to go, mate. You're 50. You've got to go. Don't you know the rules? You have to live in the country. So I had to move 2 days later. In the in between those 2 days, I foolishly agreed to go on the political chat show This Week with Andrew Neil, the old Brillo pad, isn't he? Old with a Brillo pad on his head. And Michael Portillo and Ed Balls. Just as I was going there, I was told that Nigel Farage was going to be a guest. So I said, oh, fucking hell. I thought he was actually going to be in the... So I then had to sort of sit around in this... Late at night, it was the day after my birthday, I was hungover. It was the day before we were officially moving, so I was just wishing I was in bed. I was so tired. It's recorded live, it's late at night. I was meant to be going on talking about sort of emergency questions, basically. My emergency questions, they were saying there's lots of awkwardness happening with politicians, so your comedy's about awkwardness a lot of the time, and you have these emergency questions to get out of awkwardness. So I thought I was going to be talking about the emergency questions book. And then Andrew Neil sort of introduced me saying, this is a comedian who believes we're living in the most politically awkward age of all time. Why is that, Richard? Why is that true? So I thought it was a light-hearted item at the end of the show. So I thought, well, I'll fucking try and play along with that. I said, well, you know, it's been, yeah, I mean, there's a lot of awkward interviews with politicians at the moment, Theresa May and Trump, and, you know, I got angry about Nigel Farage and saying, you know, I didn't name him, but I was saying we got that chump on you've just had on, and Andrew Neil's, and I just wasn't, you know, I was so tired, I wasn't in the zone, really. If I'd been in the zone, I think I could have had a lot of fun with this. Andrew Neil said, well, to be fair, Nigel isn't here to defend himself, so we better not stop talking about him, and I should have said, well, unluckily for me, I've chosen the 5 minutes he doesn't happen to be on the BBC, this... Which would have been literally true, because he'd literally just been on it. And Nigel Farage, who basically, in his little piece, had threatened violence. He'd threatened revolution if he didn't get Brexit to be exactly what he wanted. Didn't give him a hard time. That was fine. Now, coming in, Nigel. Yeah, fine. Foment some revolution. That's fine. It's such an embarrassing programme this week. And they do a sketch at the beginning, and it's the worst thing ever, right? You've seen it, right? It's always the worst, most embarrassing thing ever. And I'd arrived and Ed Balls was dressed as an astronaut and Michael Portillo was dressed as an astronaut. They said, sprung it on me that I was meant to be in the sketch. They said, will you dress up? I said, no, I will not dress up. So there you go, I was being snooty. I did the line for them, but I was kind of annoyed. So I kind of took the piss out of them for dressing up as all astronauts and being on Strictly Come Dancing. And Michael Portillo was just very angry about it. He kind of came at me saying my argument wasn't working, that he hated people who just picked on politicians for no reason. And he said, you should be, if you have this problem, you should become an MP. And again, I should have said, well, that means you're not qualified to talk about politics. The last I remember was you not being an MP. That's the last, I remember quite an awkward moment where you actually failed to become an MP. So maybe 1997 was the last time you should have spoken. But, you know, all these things I should have said, but I think I'd got away with it, but it was the most horrible thing that's happened. It's the most horrible thing that's happened to me since I turned 50. There, it's just that I had lots of UKIP, like all the kippers telling me what a bust I was. I felt mortified, and then I moved house the next day. So anyway, it was go. You can watch it online if you want to see me being rubbish. That's what I should have said instead. But anyway, look, we're going to crack straight on. There's a female Doctor Who as well. I haven't even had time to talk about that. Might talk about that with my next guest, who I think would make an excellent female Doctor Who. He's probably best known as Maurice Wigglethorpe Throom. That's why you're here, from the comparethemarket.com adverts, the ones without the meerkats in, or if they were in it, I don't know. Don't think they were. I think that was. I don't think they made a doll of him, though, yet. It's Robert Webb, ladies and gentlemen, from comparethemarket.com. Hello. Hello. Sorry I took the piss out of you. Please, let's...
I'm extremely well.
Don't get angry with me like Nigel Farage.
No, this will be marginally less awkward than this week.
Let's see. I've
been on that, and he's weird. He's a weird man.
Andrew Neil.
He's weird as well. Yeah. But Portillo, sat there in that horrible green room in one of his disgusting lime shirts, and just with his hands on his knees, just staring into space, thinking his Portillo thoughts. And it was really odd. I just stared.
Well, I sent you backstage. The weird thing was that I kind of shook Ed Balls' hand and I shook Portillo's hand, and then when Farage was in the room, I kind of just looked at the floor and I wouldn't engage them and I didn't shake his hand. But
because you love him so much. Oh, hi, Nigel. I can't look you in.
But it says something, you know, that you, Michael Portillo, it's acceptable to shake his hand. Yeah. And that, someone must be pretty bad. They go, oh no, I'm not touching that.
He's the new normal.
Yeah, he is. So so it was a humiliation. But never mind.
Sorry.
We won't.
Things can only get better.
I hope so. The next gig I did, I still felt the creeping nastiness.
Just that kind of what I should have said.
Yeah, yeah. And so I thought maybe that's it. Maybe it's over. So we'll see how this interview goes. Maybe
there was a time when filming Peep Show when the producer Phil Clark, who does Thai kickboxing.
Yes,
he does. And there was a time, and it was a night shoot, and somebody wandered by and went, "You're pedos! You're all pedos!" And he'd had a lovely night in the pub, but he'd come out a little bit angry. And "You're all pedos!" And he was asked to sort of move along. And Phil, who is the nicest guy you'll ever meet, just like half an hour later, you could see him still reliving it. And just what I could have done to that bloke, and how I would have taken my hands out of my pockets and just fucking got them. And delayed aggression.
I should have
the
just
aggression.
Imagine
we'd
if
missed
I just
the chance
punched
out.
Him. Well, I also just wish I'd gone, "Oh, you stupid cunt." I just wish I'd. Oh, you're all just that
it's
load
the
of cunts.
Only language they understand.
There we go. It's in the past.
Shake it out.
I'm shaking it off. I've been reading your fantastic book.
Thanks very much.
Which is called How Not to Be a Boy. The second best book that's called How Not to. How Not
yes.
to. Did you see the success of my book and think, how can I copy that?
I did not.
No, okay.
I would like to make a joke there, but the truth is I didn't.
I don't think anyone did, so I think it might is a crazy coincidence. But there is, it's about your childhood and adolescence.
Yes.
Mainly, and the difficulties you went through.
Yes.
And how you became the comedy
fucking
legend.
Super duper.
Yeah.
No, it's not a sort of prop normal celeb autobiography, because I'm not famous enough to write anything that boring. It's a sort of child and teenage memoir, but about themed around masculinity.
Yes.
And how boys are supposed to be boys and girls are supposed to be girls, and how we sort of learn those rules and drag them through into a half-formed manhood.
Yes.
And there's lots of funny bits and lots of sad bits. And
I've
run out of stuff to say about it.
Well, I've met lots of people who say when they get an autobiography of anyone's autobiography, they skip through the bit about the childhood.
Yeah,
they find that the most boring.
I do. I mean, who gives a bollocks about? I mean, you read them and they start with their fucking grandparents.
Yeah.
You go, I don't give a shit. My maternal grandparent was born in 1823. Oh, fuck off.
Yeah.
It's all that.
Yeah.
Except the grandparents are sort of coming in and out of it.
Yeah,
it's
yeah.
mainly about me.
But I disagree, because I actually think, especially with comedians, I think so much of it is formed within childhood and the childhood relationships. I think this book really shows it, right? That because it's about the things that happened to you as a kid that then inform you and make you want to go on to become a comedian.
Which is true for everyone.
Yeah.
But there are, we were talking earlier about the startling number of stand-ups who are adopted.
Yes.
And, there are these unmet needs that are being met in a peculiar way.
Yes.
And I think that's, I quote Ray Romano. Everyone loves Raymond. Not my favourite sitcom ever, but it's all right, isn't it? I found a quote from him. I read in an interview, and he said, "If my father had given me one full hug, I'd be an accountant right now." And not dissing accountants, it might be nice to be an accountant, but anyway, he chose to try to be funny.
Yeah, I always look at it, and as I was saying this to Julian Clary the other week, and think my childhood was quite nice, and my parents were pretty good. I mean, my dad was my headmaster, which was my cross to bear.
That was your big disadvantage.
That's the weird thing,
but
I think I sort of liked, Your story is very similar to mine in lots of ways, except you've had a bit more tragedy in your life than I have.
The constant death.
Yeah. Everyone stayed alive in my family.
Everyone's fucking dead.
Yeah.
But David, David James Stewart Mitchell, we've been acquainted. He had a completely normal childhood, and yes. he always feels a bit sort of guilty and a bit shifty about the fact that, oh, Jesus, he's got something to talk about with Wogan. But I had this normal
You haven't even had to talk to dead interviewers. That's how bad it's got.
I've got a cutout in the garden.
There was some similar things. The things that I kind of that interested me that were the same was, and I've talked about this before, is that I couldn't draw a number eight.
No way.
And my dad, I couldn't do it. But I could do it the same way as you, by putting two snowman. Yeah. But I couldn't do that. And right. I remember, and my dad was like your dad was. Dad was a maths teacher.
You're left-handed.
No, I'm right-handed. I'm just holding it in there.
I can use
both for holding.
Wow. That's why you get the big bucks. That's why you're the pro.
Yeah. My dad's a math teacher.
Hang on. So can I. Fucking hell. Who knew?
My dad's a math teacher, so he was sort of furious with me. And I remember I was literally sat in the cupboard under the stairs practising my eights.
Like Harry Potter?
Yeah.
Did he make you sleep there until you could do it properly?
But I remember him, you know, and I couldn't do long multiplication. He was just
Who
furious.
Could? It's a stupid idea.
But that's interesting that do you think it was just something in the 70s? There was something in the water that meant
not being able to do an 8.
I've
less of an excuse. I couldn't do a 2 either.
No.
So the whole monologue.
What was your problem with 2s? They were easy, man.
2, I don't know. It was just what happens, and then it goes. There's a diagonal, and then it's suddenly. Whoa! And then, no, I found it. It's a very aggressive number. Yeah. I just couldn't do it.
Yeah. But your dad didn't like that, did he?
No, there was less pleasant memories from my early childhood. So I was about 5, and I remember my father, who'd probably had a couple of pints at that point. He wasn't doing anything out of the ordinary for that time and place, you know, late 70s. But he came home, and he was in a terrible mood, and he just yelled at me to do a 2, do an 8, which most teachers these days, or indeed parents these days, would probably say is not best practice.
just fucking do it!
And yeah, so I turned that into a sort of humorous sketch to amuse the ladies and gentlemen in the
book.
But
man, if it had worked, how different education could be now.
They'd be knocking back the strepsils. Those teachers. It's very hard on the voice. Yeah. I'm regretting it already.
There was a few things. But I wanted to talk about, I enjoyed tell us about the guy buys.
The guy buys?
Yeah.
The guy buys were my gang of 12, yes, 12,
yeah,
imaginary friends. And we basically went around on our bikes fighting crime. Sometimes we were the wisecracking guys from Chips. Chips was.
There's been a recent film of it, although no one saw it, I don't think so.
They made a film of Chips.
They made a film of Chips.
That's a terrible idea. Yeah. Anyway, there were traffic cops in California, or I was Dick Turpin, or I was Zorro, and we'd go around, and they were basically my bodyguards, and I'd sort of count them in. I'd sort of open doors and watch them go by. And, you know, my grandparents and my mother just watching this behaviour. Okay, all right, yeah. And we'd go around with our, you know, I'd have my plastic swords and my guns and we'd go around. It was the most normal thing about me. I was heavily into violence.
Yeah.
But imaginary violence.
What did they look like, the guy buys?
They were pretty much invisible.
Could you not see them, though, when you were looking at them going in?
I sort of named them partly after my brothers and partly after the apostles and partly, you know, so they all had these. I don't know what was going on.
I had a little messianic sort of, you know, had this.
It's perfectly normal.
I think a lot of, you know, you think. I thought I might be one of the new disciples. I didn't think I was the new Jesus. I thought I might be one of the new disciples. I took it down a level.
The
new Jesus would find me and take me on, and I'd be one of his disciples.
Oh, right. You were waiting to be found.
Yeah.
That's interesting.
Yeah.
But I, you know, but sometimes I wondered if I might see the new Jesus.
Welcome to We're Fucked Up tonight.
And I still, I'm not sure we still could be the new Jesus. Only time will tell.
It's too soon to say.
It is.
I might be a sleeper Jesus. I don't know that I'm Jesus. Well, and then one day I'll just get woke.
That's the thing that made me think I might be Jesus, was Jesus didn't know he was Jesus.
He didn't.
Even though all the stars
even,
and stuff.
He didn't even say he was Jesus. No. St. Paul said 18 years later that he was Jesus.
Yeah.
That's a nearly fact.
But he didn't know even he didn't know when he was a kid that he was Jesus. Although in some of the apocryphal gospels, he turns kids into pigs and stuff like that. Have you seen the...
That's why they got cut.
Yeah.
It's like in the redraft.
Yeah. I would definitely, if I had been...
The channel didn't like it.
It's true. It's true. Look it up. There's some good apocrypha about Jesus.
I love a bit of apocrypha.
Yeah, it's good.
I can't spell it.
I can't. I'm not sure I can say it. But maybe I got away with it. Yes, well, I enjoyed that. And also you play Civilization 2 specifically when you're a grown-up. And I did. I played that a lot.
I did.
Did you ever play Civilization 3 and 4 and 5?
I didn't know because Civilization 2 was enough to end an 8-year relationship. So I thought I should stop playing Civilization 2 after she moved out.
Right.
Actually, I played it for a while after she, you know, with less guilt.
Yeah.
I got really stuck in.
I started playing it again the other day. I found it on online and downloaded it. It's a dangerous
thing. Yeah.
But I was single. I used to play it all weekend on my own. You know, I'd be start on Friday night and play and have 2 hours sleep over the weekend and finish a game of Civilization.
Yeah, no, I remember many nights when the person I was with, who I called Jenna, just to give a personal plausible deniability, that's not her name, but she would sort of go glumly to bed again and say, "Yeah, I'll be with you in 5 minutes," and then sort of 3 hours and a bottle of wine later.
Hard to leave Civilization.
Hang on, 3 hours. That's three bottles of wine.
You've got like a caravan, and it's on its way to Irkutsk or wherever. I just see this one through to there.
Did you ever just go fuck it and start a nuclear war?
I did. I kind of enjoyed that. There was someone who played. If you don't like Civilization 2, you're not going to enjoy the rest of the podcast because that's all I've got proper here to talk about.
So
there was someone who has been playing Civilization 2. For about 15 years. So did anyone see this? And they had a nuclear war.
They're not listening anymore, Rich.
It's just a wasteland. But he's keeping it going enough to keep the game going, but it's just a horrible...
It's just
turned
the whole planet into...
Because you can keep
nothing.
Going forever if you want. You complete your mission, get to Alpha Centauri.
I'm trying not to think of that as a...
And you can then carry on. And when I was playing on my own, I sort of just got to... I didn't want to have wars this time. I just wanted to make everything perfect in the world.
Does it make you live forever if you play it forever?
Yeah, that would be nice to think it did. But I was just trying to get rid of all the ice and all the... And make everything...
Is that since you became a daddy?
Yeah, I think it must be something to do with that. So I didn't have any tragedies in my life, but you had... and again, this is something I've got...
I think you probably did.
I didn't have any tragedies.
But not just death-based.
What
about
really?
The champagne bottle up your anus?
That was something...
Is that tragic or is that comic?
It was all right. It wasn't what I was into. I said
you weren't necessarily a great man brought down by that champagne.
The person,
cork
without giving too much
bottle.
Of my book away, the person who put the bottle in my anus, I said, "What are you doing?" She said, "I thought you might like it." He or she said, "I thought you might like it," and I said, "No."
No, and so I didn't think I would. And now that you've done that, I was right.
Let's carry on with something else. But I've got...
Sorry, you were saying...
I'm very interested in... Well, you know, in the book you talk about, there's two things in... there's more than two things, but your elder brother died before you were born, and that's the reason you were born, in a sense,
yes.
Is what you're talking about, because...
Yeah, it's quite likely that the reason I was born is because someone else died.
Yeah.
So I know a thing or two about luck.
Yes.
And then
you also... And your mother also died when you were 17.
Indeed.
And then... But also within the book you're talking about...
And there's all the... And there's funny bits as well.
Yeah. And then your dad dies, and your granddad dies, and your stepdad
dies.
Yeah,
everyone
dies. And, but there, that's all at the end. But it does barely matters.
We believe, so there's two important deaths quite close to the start, then some funny book, and then more death. Conclusion.
But it's about extrapolating that into what you're saying in the book of you know, if that hadn't happened, if your mum hadn't died, then you wouldn't have finally had your family that you had. If your brother hadn't died, you may not have existed. But that's sort of true of every single.
Well, I think we make these stories for ourselves, and we go, "This I'm like this because of this story that I've." And it's usually like like all stories, it's completely made up, that actually, you know, we just go along in life and these things happen to us and we sort of cope and rationalise it in various ways. And sometimes it's a bad story. Sometimes it's a story you need to grow out of. I mean, the idea that the silver lining to my mother dying, and, you know, if you're 17 and your mum dies, you've got to try to make it mean something. And what I tried to make it mean was, I am going to be a comedy actor and writer, and that's and I'm emboldened to do that now. But I probably would have done anyway.
Yeah.
And it's not always. Sometimes you're not telling yourself something. The story isn't necessarily very healthy.
No, and you know, and whatever had happened, you know, as you say, it might very well have happened anyway, regardless. Yeah. And also, if you'd gone to Leeds University and you wouldn't have met David.
Well, there are funny people at Leeds, but I wouldn't have met David, and that would have, so the course of his, you know, Peep Show might have been, those characters might have been played by the Chuckle Brothers, or, and who's to say that wouldn't have been as good a show?
That might have been good.
Or a better show, but it's a different show.
Hard to work out which one would be, well, actually, maybe it isn't. I think Barry would probably be David's character.
I don't know their first names.
I don't know Barry's. Barry, what's the other one called?
I shouldn't bring them up without
Paul.
Without,
and there was there was some older Chuckle Brothers as well. What were they called? Yeah, fuck you. Fuck you, my Wikipedia audience. There was four Chuckle Brothers, actually. Look it up on Wikipedia. There's some older ones, and then those two are the younger Chuckle
Brothers.
What,
they regenerated into?
There's four. I think the older two must be...
So there was Buck Fizz, and then they sort of splintered off and became Dollar.
I think it's more or less...
Let's bring up more baffling 80s references.
It's very... the book's really... Good. I read it in a day. It's a thick book, and so that's not.
It's 320 pages long.
I read it in one day, start to finish, and
That's very patronising, but I know you're busy.
I am very busy.
You've been moving.
I've been moving. It was my Sunday day. I spent the whole day reading it, and it's really, really, you know, engaging and interesting. And you're very honest, I think, and very self-critical about certainly your younger.
People have said that, and it's good to hear. But also, there is you don't do that unless you quietly think that you're terrific. And if I'm saying I was such an asshole, I was such an asshole, I was such an asshole, the heavy implication is I'm fine now, and that's not necessarily true.
No.
But I'm trying to get better. But
do you think in another 10 years you might write another book about what an asshole you are?
About an asshole. That time when I sat with Richard Herring saying that all my assholeness was in the past. What an arsehole. I was being an arsehole.
Well, I do sort of feel that, because I do a show now, it seems, every 10 years about where I am in my life. And, you know, I certainly look back at myself at 40 and I was a complete... I mean, you know, I was having a nice time in a way and having a horrible time in another way. But I was I suppose what you were doing in your 20s, which is the normal time to do it, but I was having a midlife crisis and doing all that again. And being a bit more of a mature arsehole, but still being an arsehole.
Just an old arsehole.
An old, puckered arsehole. Slightly...
Inflexible, easily torn.
Yeah, a torn arsehole. And now I think I'm...
Come on.
Now I think I'm pretty... You know, I'm a bit more sorted out, but
we all think we're...
But I think in 10 years...
We should bring our wives on. None of what you're saying is true.
I think you're right. So that's. I mean, I think I'd be interested to look back when I'm. I hope I live another 10 years so I can look back.
Well,
at
I hope
this
so too, Richard.
And then say I was actually.
At least
I was an idiot. At least, yeah. But you know, that's the thing. When you're 50, it'd be sad. It's very sad to die in your 40s, which you still are. I hope that doesn't happen. It's not happened to me. I can tell you for sure that I've definitely got to my 50s.
It's a loving. We're wishing each other at least.
It's pretty.
6 to 10 years
it's
more life.
It's pretty sad to die in your 50s, but in your 60s, yeah.
Yeah.
It's sort of expected. Yeah, well, 50, if you're like.
When
yeah.
does it get tragic?
Yeah, it's not
just. Is it 65,
66? I mean, it wouldn't. 50, if someone dies at 60, what is it? Everyone dying at 68, 69, that's the sort of the age people are dying.
Yeah.
And you kind of go, yeah, I mean, that's quite sad, but, you know.
58's sad.
Yeah, 58's sad.
58's sad.
All the
61, 50s. Bit sad.
Yeah.
65,
not
depends
bad.
What generation they are and, you know, what they did with their
and then
lifestyle.
94.
No one
cares.
Fuck off.
So
it's only, all the pills that are keeping you alive. You just sat there in that chair in that care home.
Yeah.
So staring into space.
The trick is, I'm supposed to find the moment. the age to die where you've really lived your life to the full, but people will still feel a bit sorry about it.
That's what I'm aiming for.
98. Oh, thank God. Thank God. Who was he anyway? All your contemporaries are dead. No one knows who you are. There's no one at your funeral. My grandma, who lived 102.
Wow.
And everyone's going, why did she fuck off? No, they weren't. But her, you know, she'd been an amazingly popular woman in her life, but no one she knew
everyone's
was alive
dead.
Anymore.
Yeah.
So, you know. So that's bad.
That's the risk you take.
That's the punishment. I want to have my funeral. I'll have my funeral. I want a few of my friends to have died. As Stuart Lee, I would like to be dead.
Because you want the last word.
Yeah.
You get to stand there, do the eulogy, yeah. Do all the jokes he wouldn't let you do in Fist of Fun. Yeah. So, who's laughing now, Stu? Yeah, I can see that.
But many of my friends I would like to be alive so that they feel guilty
so,
about
yeah,
not
the,
treating
the eloquent
me better.
Ones, the ones who speak well about you.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. I don't know, but then should I be wishing the people I like the least to live the longest so that they have the punishment of
it's
having a terrible
thing.
So anyway, what is that age you think that is the best age to die at where you are old enough but still young enough?
I'd want to die when I was, I don't know, because I might say 86, but then my 85-year-old self go, fuck off. But I don't know. Old enough to be old,
yeah.
But not so old that you're in any kind of pain whatsoever.
Yeah, well, that's true, yeah.
And still sort of walking around like a 50-year-old,
yeah.
As sprightly as you.
Yes. I was going to say that age is probably 49, I'm afraid.
and then you get run over,
yeah.
or something happens that your family are prepared for,
yeah.
But which won't hurt too much.
Okay.
And then you die in your sleep,
yeah.
Peacefully at home.
Well, let's hope that it's a long way off for both of us.
We're watching men of a certain age chat about their lives.
I had another.
And the end of their lives.
No, I had something else to say, but it's gone because of my age.
Yep.
It's gone. We'll talk a bit more about the book and then we might move on to this. But I think the book's well worth talking about and well worth buying.
It doesn't look like this, by the way. This is the review copy. This is what they send to important people like Rich. It's not. Bills for being a man, don't cry. This is the only thing in the book that I didn't write. And it's on the front. I'm not moaning. I'm slightly moaning. But the front will just have my stupid face on it.
Good.
Of the
will,
real
it ha- will it have that on the, will
it? Will
have
that
stupid face.
That particular stupid face
that is
on the front.
That is a good one. That's a good stupid face. I think there's, again, in my book, Talking Cock, which uh-huh. I'm sure you... it's probably in the bibliography at the back. But I talked about how I think the expectations on male being a man and being a woman are so strong that I think people gravitate towards them. And this is sort of partly the theory in your that we're brought up to believe boys behave in a certain way and girls behave in a certain way.
Yeah.
And then that's a sort of self-fulfilling prophecy up to an extent. Is that
basically, gender is made up. There is sex, and that itself is a sort of a spectrum, but we can identify who's got a willy and who hasn't. But then gender is the stuff that we put on top of that to amplify those differences.
Yeah.
And there are differences, but they become hugely exaggerated. So boys get told that, oh, you love maths and swimming and climbing trees and this is what you like, and girls are told a whole other set of rules. And if you have trouble fitting into those, then, okay, that's a bit uncomfortable, but it's not a big deal. But what is a big deal is the stuff that boys get told about emotional repression.
Yes.
That they have to, if you fall over, man up, get up, don't cry. All that stuff about being tough and basically not acknowledging your own emotions. And if you keep being told don't express these negative emotions, eventually it'll start sounding like don't feel these feelings and don't have these feelings,
yes.
Don't acknowledge these feelings. And so you end up, you know, if you become sad, it has to come out somewhere. If you can't acknowledge if you can't digest a big embarrassment sandwich, it's going to come out somewhere else as a smell for everyone else.
Yes.
And so, you know, Donald Trump's Twitter feed is like one angry, frightened turd after another.
Yeah.
And so you have to be, you're not taught those skills to become your own emotional detective and to work out why I'm feeling this feeling that I'm feeling. And
sure.
You end up just not using your brain properly. And I think that's probably quite a big topic.
Yes.
If half the population of the world are just going around going, I'm fine, everything's fine. Then that's a problem.
Do you think it's do you think specifically it might be a bit more of a British thing, and it might be a bit more of our father's generation British thing? In that, I think, you know, I think a lot of my male friends are much more better at this than are better at communicating to their children about emotions. And but it feels like our you know, maybe something to do with being a child in the war, or, you know, people.
I think
people die. You know, people dying. So yeah, just had to carry on after the war.
And I think sons, people brought up by men who were in a war, or brought up by the sons of men who were in a war.
Yeah.
In our sort of our generation's case, is, you know, the worst thing you can possibly be accused of is self-indulgence, and self-indulgence is, you know, is just a bad way of naming expressing a negative emotion. So it. You know, they are, because, you know, I'm not telling soldiers that they need to get in touch with their feelings, because that's the last fucking thing they need. If you're going to shoot someone, don't think about how that feels. You know, they are specifically trained not to do that, which is fine. Well, which is necessary. It's not fine, but it's necessary in that situation. But in peacetime, for most men, no, we don't need to close ourselves off like that. And I'm not saying everyone needs to burst into tears at every opportunity. That would be horrible. but there is a middle ground, and I don't think we're in it.
But it's difficult to escape, I think, your own father.
Yeah.
So, I mean, I think you do, and I think you talk about this a little bit in your book about how, you know, you started adapting.
Yes,
not the same, but similar.
Yeah, well, this is me saying I used to be an arsehole, but Abby is actually in the audience, and she would strenuously claim that I am still an arsehole. There she is. And, but it's that kind of, you know, there are lots of ways to be a dad, but instead of inventing my own way, I just followed the original model. And the original model was no beauty. It was my own father, who drank a lot and had a short temper and took a flexible attitude to monogamy. That there I did not follow his example, I may say. But generally, I was drinking too much, and I was just boring, and I wasn't present when the children were around, and I just... And I had that breadwinning panic, that kind of, instead of, you know, I could have just gone on, Peep Show was still going, the sketch show was still going. That's a lot of fantastic work.
Yeah.
But instead of just doing that, I said yes to everything. The kind of list that you were reading out the last time I was here. You know, all the shittiest and corniest voiceovers and show, you know, crappy presenter shows, movie mistakes and all that. I look at my CV over those years, and it's just... I just went mental, so I just wasn't around at all.
But it's a difficult balance, isn't it? Because there's a part of you thinking, I'm providing for my family by doing this.
Well, that's
work.
Exactly what you learn, and you know, it is drilled into you that not drilled into you, but it is heavily implied everywhere. Certainly, growing up in the 70s and 80s, that is what blokes do. This is what women do, and you're trying to challenge those ideas with the brain that was formed in that environment.
Yes.
And so it's, you know, it's not the evolution of gills, but it does take a bit of effort to form new habits.
Sure. It's very interesting stuff. I will break away, though, to ask you some important emergency questions that I thought I would be asking to Michael Portillo.
It's Twinkie, not the kangaroo.
Okay. let's see what I've got for you. I'm not even. I'm just going to pick one fairly at random. Not that one again. That one, we've had that. Oh, this is quite a good one. Who do you consider the most appalling member of Margaret Thatcher's cabinet? Excluding Margaret Thatcher.
Excluding Margaret Thatcher. That was the obvious question. Wow, so many. I want to say Norman Tebbit, but that was it's too obvious, and he did get sort of, you know, badly hurt in that bomb. Yeah. And so I feel a bit sorry for him, even though.
Want flexibility? Take yoga. Want flexibility with your health insurance? Check out United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly medical, dental, and vision coverage that may be right for you. More at uh1.com. Here's a cool fact. A crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Another cool fact? You can get short-term health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans are designed for people who are between jobs, coming off their parents' plan, or turning a side hustle into a full-time gig. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. Get more cool facts about UnitedHealthcare short-term plans at uh1.com.
Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
He's so nasty. Cecil Parkinson was kind of slimy. Everyone said he was a great communicator because he did this and this a lot. But he was
Cecil Parkinson was my choice at the time of writing.
Oh, really?
Book, yeah.
Oh, interesting.
I just met Cecil Parkinson 2 weeks before he died, and he was very charming. But then he died.
He speaks well of you.
And I wasn't.
I'm sure he was charming.
But he was a horrible.
Portillo was charming to me.
Yeah. Well, he was charming to me before he suddenly turned on me like. Yeah, anger. I got to him.
He switches it on and off.
He does, yeah.
He's one of those guys.
Good. Well, they were all pretty nasty. John Majors was all right, wasn't he? Old John Majors.
Old John Majors?
Yeah.
Yeah, okay. With his glasses. That was funny what they did, spitting image. They painted him grey.
Yes.
So that so as to imply his boredomness.
All right, here's another one. And he ate peas, that's what they did. I remember actually with John Majors, I was writing for Weekending at the time that he became Prime Minister, and they did loads. They came to interview us at Weekending about how we were, because Margaret Thatcher had been so colourful, what we were going to do with John Majors. And obviously we didn't know, because it just happened.
we don't know what to do.
We don't know what's going to happen.
Sounds.
If everyone else in the world left in a spaceship and left you behind, so everything belonged to you, where would you live? What paintings would you have on your wall? Would you be lonely? Where would you be the most ostentatious place you would masturbate?
I'm going to do that backwards.
Okay.
The Taj Mahal would be where I would masturbate.
Would the domes help you?
With the little lovely water features. Yeah. That's where I'd would spunk
you be,
into.
Would you be thinking this is where Princess Diana looks sad? Would be that one of the things that helped you?
That actually adds a little frisson that I hadn't thought of. Would I be lonely? Yes.
Yes.
What was the one before that?
What paintings would you have on your wall? You could have any painting.
Oh, I probably have that one of that. Do you remember the one from the 70s, the woman with the green face?
Yes.
Yeah, I'd have that one.
You can have that now. There's loads of those.
No, I want that because it would, you know.
You want the original one of that, original of
because
that.
Because it's fascinating. It's a fascinating picture. Why would anyone paint that?
And
just look at it forever.
Where would you live if you could live in any house and if everyone had gone and left everywhere empty?
Well, quite close to the Taj Mahal. probably
in the
Taj. Is there are there facilities? I mean, do people don't live there? Is it a religious shrine?
I think it's a palace. I believe it was a palace it's quite old, isn't it?
Yeah.
Sort of 1500s or something.
Seems
like that.
Seems old.
And I think it was built by, I'm only guessing, by someone for his wife. I think it was like a love gift for her.
Oh, that's nice. It's a mausoleum.
It was a mausoleum. Oh, that's it in a way.
That's in very bad taste. Oh, I really. Oh, that is not what she would have wanted. Probably.
I don't know. If people were still wanking over me in 600 years' time, I'd be delighted about that.
Well, that's a comfort.
It is. I mean, I don't mind. It could be over, literally over me, but I was imagining.
It's good that you don't mind.
I was imagining in my mind. I mean, over me rather than on top of my.
Yes,
my mummified corpse. I'd like to be mummified in the Taj Mahal. And then anyone who wants to come along, just men or women.
Yeah, whatever.
Have a wank. Just come and just leave it to dry. to dry. That would probably be a preservative.
It's
good for your skin, isn't it, apparently? So
probably be good for the...
That's what I would like. Good question. That was a good question.
Good question.
Here's another.
That book is full of those good questions.
Here's one that isn't in this book. What is this? Let me just get this right. I haven't got it written down. What is the strangest thing you've ever found in the embers of a bonfire? This is my new favourite question.
Oh, it would be that boy I killed. And I kind I dragged his body underneath what I thought was just, you know, a pile of rubbish. And it turned out it was going to be a bonfire.
Good, that's on you. I'd get someone with that. There's that Peep Show episode, isn't there, where you burn a dog?
We burn a dog, yeah.
Did you really burn a dog for that?
Eat the dog. We didn't burn a dog. But I did eat some charred turkey, and it was turkey.
Yeah.
That's not funny, but it's true.
One of my emergency questions, and having read your book, I know there's an answer to this that I don't think I want to discuss it, but the one I was asking last week, which I thought was good, was, have you ever fallen downstairs? But you have
fallen downstairs. It's my earliest childhood memory, Yes, I fell down some stairs. Yeah. My mother was there at the bottom, scooping me up and making consoling noises, and my father was there laughing. Because he was trying to toughen me up.
Those are my two questions to get interesting childhood memories. And see, it worked. The second one worked. I'll ask you a light-hearted one. Have you ever seen the TV show Friends?
Yes, I have.
Yeah, it's good, isn't it?
Yes, it's very good.
Yeah.
I think I know all their names now. There are so many of them. There's six people. Yeah. It's really hard to remember all their names.
This is one of my new emergency questions. I think this is just one I wrote in the front of someone's book. If you had to live the rest of your life either as Chandler from Friends or as the actor Matthew Perry, which of those would you choose?
It's definitely Chandler from Friends.
Is it,
yeah.
You'd like to be married to Monica with some adopted
twins?
Yeah,
I think they're going to be fine.
Yeah.
Whereas Matthew Perry, I gather, has issues. I mean, don't we all?
Yeah.
But I don't want his issues, I want mine.
Yeah, fair enough.
Or Chandler's, preferably.
Chandler's an interesting character, isn't he?
He is, yeah.
Yeah, it's good.
They've given him the gift of wit. He's the witty one.
He is. So what do you think about the... this will make no sense in 3 months' time. What do you think about the old Doctor Who being making a woman, eh?
I'm delighted.
What's that about?
I think it's a good idea. Let's go. But there are people saying, oh, yeah, but it's been a male character all this time, so I'm a bit... Hopefully it'll be fine, but I think it's a bit weird. And that's a perfectly reasonable position. But there are people, of course, going, it's Preseeker mad! What the fuck is going on? You're stealing my childhood! You're stealing my childhood! And I don't really understand those people.
Well, he's not... I mean, the thing with Doctor Who is so much... He's sort of sexless, really. It's not, if he was...
He's got two hearts.
Yeah.
I don't really care how many testicles or boobs he's got.
But it's not like...
He's not getting it out every week, is he?
He's not going to be getting waving it around.
He's not been getting it out at all. I've never seen that.
No.
Is that the sort of Doctor Who Black album where there's this bootleg thing with
he goes to the Taj Mahal, whacking off. He goes to the Taj Mahal when it's being built and he just can't stop himself.
You know those fucking Gallifreyans.
He's only not human after all. Yeah.
No, they only invented the whole concept of regeneration when, you know, William Hartnell, it got to that stage, that happens to older actors sometimes, that they can't remember their lines anymore and they get a bit fucking grumpy. And he just didn't want to do it anymore. And they went, well, we don't want to cancel the show. Oh, we'll make up this thing where another actor comes in and plays the character. It wasn't written by God. That was a fucking, some producer having a bright idea.
And there are only meant to be 12 regenerations. That's what I'm upset about. Hmm. And so, you know, they've done this as 13 now, so what's that about?
Oh, it's all made up, lads.
Maybe there's only allowed to be 12 men, and then it's 12 women, and then the 12 bi guys. Sorry, guy buys.
Actually, I can reveal now, each of the first 12 doctors were a different guy buy.
I thought, when they did the end of the last episode, I thought maybe Peter Capaldi was going to become William Hartnell. I thought maybe Peter Capaldi was the young William Hartnell and he was just going to live for another 50 years. But they don't get older, do they?
They don't know, but that's a good idea.
Yeah, and then they could just start it again.
You could write it, but you probably can't be bothered.
No, I can't be bothered. I'm writing my own thing about the sort of like Doctor Who, but it's about something else.
But it'll be brilliant.
I'll ask you another emergency question. This is one you have written. Is there any romance greater than the one a teenage boy has with his own loneliness?
That was a line that turned up in my diary, aged 16, and I thought it was such a great line, I decided not to spoil it by answering the question.
The answer is yes, though.
The answer is yes. There is a greater romance than the one a teenage boy has with his own loneliness. The one the teenage boy is having with his own loneliness is not really a romance. It's just a lot of masturbation.
It is. That's nice. I love it, but I also kept it. You know, I kept the diary when I was a kid, and you were also on the Teenage Diary Radio 4 show where you went quite a lot.
Yeah, well, there's so much appalling stuff in that diary that I haven't had to overlap any of it with the stuff I did with Rufus Hound. So it's all new horrible shit.
Did you keep? It seems like you kept a diary for quite a long time.
I think it was one of my main things that I did. Yeah, you know, sort of, you know, time and motion study of how I spent my days. There are sort of three volumes and it comes and they're all closely written, angrily written. And this is why Marina won't go out with me, because she lacks the simple imagination. And what I should have done is, you know, had a bath more than once a week. Or perhaps got that school blazer that I've been wearing 5 days a week and has never been washed or dry cleaned. Perhaps put that in the washing machine. Ask girls how they are today. These would have been simple steps.
It's amazing how, you know... But it's sort of what men are like on Twitter. It's like what grown men are like on Twitter, isn't it? Where they get angry with people not just immediately being in love with them. You know, hello. Yeah. You see all those times when women tweet like little dating apps or just a Twitter feed where someone's gone, oh, hello, going, yeah, and you talk to them a bit and they go, oh, you fucking bitch, why did you leave me on? You know, fucking hell. Well, you know, that's basically what my teenage diary is.
It's like my favourite headline in The Onion, sort of satirical newspaper. Why can't I sell more of these fucking Bibles? And it's kind of, why don't you like me, bitch? It's just not going to work.
Yeah, it's sort of...
I mean, I wasn't like that in person, but I was being very rude about them in the diary.
No, that's what I enjoyed
about... And thank God there was no internet. Otherwise, I could have been one of those little fucking entitled pricks who, you know, turn up and make a little video about how... They have a name for it now. They call themselves incels.
Right.
Which means involuntary celibate.
Right.
And they have forums and they talk to each other about how feminism is destroying them and how unfair it is and how, you know, women are so horrible to them, they're never going to breed and that will fucking teach them a lesson because there won't be any more humans or feminists. God, you know, I was just moaning.
Yeah, we're sort of moaning to yourself, and so then it's, you know, unless you want to reveal it at some point later point when you write an autobiography, you know, it's just there and you get it out and no one sees it, which is kind of healthy. I think if you create something that then other
in
people
in the real world occupied by other real people.
Well, and then other people going, yes, I'm like that too. And so then you go, oh, let's never break up. But I mean, you do that again as a teenager. I think like me and my friends were like we loved being immature and we didn't like the people who pretended they were mature as we saw it, and so we would deliberately be as childish as possible for as long as possible.
Yeah, but, you know, it's all right being in a gang. Being in a gang is great as long as you don't, you know, hurt people.
But it is interesting. But it's that difference between when you read your diary and you remember the person you were, and it's exactly that. It's that kind of. And the anger that comes, the horrible stuff that comes out in the diary, which is not really who one was.
No, not really. And I hope you can tell the difference between this.
But both, I mean, for anyone, I just think in my own diary, it's just full of these. And it's that passion and anger and confusion. Yeah. And
it's also showing up, you know, if you're interested in writing and you enjoy writing, it is also, you know, getting to the end of this sentence and, you know, you do get in a diary. Where there's no responsibility to a reader, you are allowed to just get carried away and it doesn't have to particularly make sense.
Yeah.
You're just enjoying the language.
But yeah, it's, and I think going to all the stuff about going to university. I think you were more. I was very unsuccessful with women and girls at university for a long time though as well. Was you had some success quite early on by the looks?
Yes, that it all cheered up when I went to university. Yes,
but using your tragic circumstances.
Oh, that helped. That helped a big time. But I thought that's what she would have wanted. Mum would have wanted me to use her tragic early death to get laid as often as possible. Yeah, it really helps.
Yeah.
Because you sort of go, it's not saying, by the way, my mother died. It's kind of allowing that information to be disseminated.
Yeah.
And then when they ask you about it, then you just sort of modestly shrug it off and be really fucking cool about it. And, you know, it's just something that happened and, you know, sometimes it's hard and, you know, and just I was 20 and really up for it. And so of course...
Damn, I wish my mum had died. I had nothing, or been adopted, or anything.
My dad was headmaster. It was quite tough, actually. Yeah. You probably want to touch this now.
Oh, and I enjoyed your jealousy of Bross.
Bross!
Yeah.
So, for younger members of the audience, Bross were... it was like, imagine Justin Bieber, but there's three of him, and two of him are identical twins, and the other one is just this kind of, well, presumably a mutant, who they keep in a dungeon.
It's Craig was the third one.
I hated Bross because all the girls at school wanted to have sex with Bross, and none of them wanted to have sex with me. They weren't actually allowed to have sex with me. I'm talking about pre-16. But I just thought it would be polite if they'd expressed the idea that it was a pity that they weren't allowed to have sex with me, as well as not allowed to have sex with Bross.
I was at school with Bross.
Were you?
For 1 year, I was at school with Bross.
You could have done something about them before they became the monster.
It's like I saw Michael Patillo. I've been in the same room. Actually, with Nigel Farage.
All the people Nigel you could
Farage,
have killed.
Nigel Farage came out of the studio. I'd gone to the loo, and he came out of his studio after his doing bit, and we walked along this very dark corridor in the BBC, and there was no one else around. And I was walking just behind him, and I thought, I could just push him out that window. And I tweeted about it, and then... Yes.
And then lots of people said, actually, it's not very funny to joke about murder.
Well, I didn't say what I would do, and then some UKipper...
Of course.
...said, I am informing the Metropolitan Police about what you've said. You said you were in an alleyway and you were going to kill him, and now you're going... And I said, I was in a corridor, I didn't say what I was going to do.
And the Metropolitan Police have got back to me, and they've told me to go fuck myself, which is just typical of feminazis.
But, Bross... Bross, but I was in love with Bridget Seeley, and both of Bross got off with her.
Oh my God!
So imagine that literally happened to me.
Sick bastards.
I mean, they could pretend.
They could do anything.
They could just pretend they were the other one.
It's like The Prestige, and it turns out there's fucking infinite numbers of them.
They came to.
That's a spoiler.
I think if they hadn't left Cheddar, they came to Cheddar and lived in Cheddar for a year, and then they were in the year below me.
Oh,
yeah. And then they went on to be successful.
And who was it? Who was it?
Bridget Seeley.
Oh, Bridget.
Yeah, I loved her. When we went on a school trip, we were singing "Bridge Over Troubled Water" in the coach, and I would say like a Bridget over troubled water. That was my way of trying to
impress her. Yeah. but she wasn't going for it.
She wasn't impressed.
And they were at the back going, "Jack the boy, Jack the boy." I say in the book that I'm watching Bross on Top of the Pops singing "Drop the Boy," and I'm now being this insufferable teenager and trying to impress everyone with the way I can deconstruct Bross lyrics. I say, "Drop the boy," they say. Only a boy would need. Oh, I'm a man. Yeah, I'm a man. Yes, I am. Is one of the lyrics. And I say, "I'm a man." He says, "Only a boy would need to say so." And I was so fucked. I've been waiting to try that out for a week.
And now I'm jumping for joy. That was the other bit. And so,
yeah, now I'm jumping. Have you ever seen a man jump for joy? I think not. I didn't actually talk like this, but... Yeah.
But ironically, out of all of them, Craig, the third one, did the best, because they gave him £1 million when he left. And then I think he went to become a big record producer or something. And he married some pop star, I think.
Was it?
Anyway, you're very bad this week's audience for filling in my slight lack of knowledge.
Was it Madonna?
It was Madonna. He married Madonna, right. And then he married all of the Spice Girls.
Yeah,
and then they got divorced and had all their money. But I believe I met one of them. I think which one's the one who went
Spice
to America?
Person.
No, one of the Goss brothers. Was it? Matt. I met Matt on a radio show.
Did you? Was he charming? I'm sure they're very nice.
Nice.
They're very nice people.
He didn't remember me from school
when I was 16. That's...
And now look at you.
Well,
were they in Peep Show? Were they?
No, they were not in Peep Show.
Were they in Confetti? Were they in the film Confetti?
They weren't even in Confetti, playing a nudist opposite a sobbing co-star. They didn't have that great pleasure. fuck.
Let me ask you another emergency question.
Great. I'd like to see Peep Show starring the Gosses.
Yeah, that would be good. Well, like twins.
Yeah. Yeah. But it would yeah. I mean, I say I'd like to see it. It would probably be fucking rubbish.
It would be. I would like to see.
I mean, they're not funny. I would one of them can sing.
I would like Jedward to be in everything. I would really like I've done this before, but I would like Jedward. I would like to do a version of Deadwood, which has Jedward in it. It's called Jedward Deadwood. And it's not. You have to refilm the whole thing shot for shot with the same actors who were in the original Deadwood.
Yeah.
But Jedward are always in the back of every shot.
They're always doing their Jedward's moves.
And they're Jedward. They're not dressed in contemporary clothes.
That's great.
But everyone else has to act around.
I like things happening in the background, but I particularly like that.
Jedward Deadwood. I think it would be good. Let me see. Let me see if I've got... I'll try and do one without anuses in it and penises in it.
Let's go for it.
It's so childish.
No, let's just do it.
What is the shortest time between buying something expensive / nice and breaking it that you have experienced?
Ooh. Yeah. My first daughter was an android.
Right.
And I put in AA batteries where there should be AAA batteries, and I just stuffed them in, and it broke.
Wow.
That's a made up answer.
Oh, I thought, fuck.
True answer. Right. Certainly not one that doesn't involve anuses and penises.
Okay. Have you ever surprised a dog?
I must have done.
Yeah.
I must have done. They're very easily startled.
Yeah.
Because they kind of go around, you know, doing their thing, and then there's a noise, and then they're like that. And
true, yeah.
Yeah, so I may well have done it. It hasn't stuck.
No, okay. This is a question I've only asked backstage, I think, so far, and this is one of my new favourite emergency questions.
Okay.
Would you like to have a bath with my dad? He's 80 years old. I'll give you some background on him on his side.
Yeah.
I mean, it's all not a sexual thing. It's just you and him
having a bath.
Because I used to have baths with him when I was little.
Yeah.
It was fine.
Yeah.
But now I'd find it awkward.
It would be.
But
big bath. Let's assume it's a big...
It would be. Have to quite big. He's not as mobile as he used to be. But, you know, that doesn't really matter in a bath situation.
Is he still at an age where he can... He's still clinging on to his... He's not going to shit the bath.
Oh, I don't think he'll shit the bath.
Okay.
I mean, even if he...
All right, I'm just gathering information.
We could make sure he had gone to the toilet before the bath.
Okay.
If you were worried about that.
It's just, you know, I know you've been doing this a lot, Dad. It's just this one insists that you go to the toilet first. He's a bit spiky like that. Well,
it's called Keith Haring.
Maybe dinner and a movie. We get introduced
It's not a date. It's not a sexy
relatives.
Thing. It's just like saving water, helping the environment.
You know what? I'm going to say no.
Okay. Everyone said no so far.
I'm going to say no.
It's very insulting to my dad.
I'm going
to
say no.
What is the worst place you've ever picnicked?
All picnics. All places. Because I hate picnics.
Yeah.
They're like a cheapskate throwing a party. Oh, should we have a picnic? Well, shall we? You want us to all bring our own fucking food and then sit on the ground with the ants and the flying ants and the snakes?
Could be sometimes. Could be quite
and
nice.
The scorpions.
What I've noticed quite a lot is when you go to stop at service stations, which I do a fair deal in my time, there's often people sitting in chairs they've brought themselves on the grass verge by the car park, eating sandwiches they brought with them.
Looking at the cars.
Yeah, and just sort of sitting by the car park where it's just there's cars and fumes wafting by. They don't even take the sandwiches into the service station and sort of sit on a chair.
No, why spoil a lovely day? We could be al fresco.
I mean, I think they might be worried about being thrown out of the service station, but there's the typical one of the on the hard shoulder sometimes. In comedy shows, you say, but I don't know if that really happens in real life.
I've never seen that. Well, I grew up next to RAF Coningsby, and people would, you know, there was a bit, because there weren't very wide roads, so you'd always have that sort of bit where you have to move to one side to let a car go by, because there wasn't quite room for two cars. And people would occupy that bit so that they could get their chairs out and look at the aeroplanes.
Yes.
Older married couples... But he was the one with the binoculars, and she was the one with the thermos.
Yeah.
And we used to drive by those fucking
idiots, we'll be like
laughing
that.
At them.
We'll be there
well,
one day.
You know, everyone's going to have a hobby, but I mean, blimey.
I know what I wanted to talk to you about. That I was nearly going to introduce you with this. The first show you did with David Mitchell, apart from you did a pantomime. where you, but you
yeah,
did
it was a student pantomime.
You
yeah.
did a show called Innocent Millions Dead or Dying, a wry look at the post-apocalyptic age with songs.
Correct.
Can you tell me a lot about that, please? So I'd like to, and maybe sing some of the songs from it for me.
It was blimey. It was the first show we did, and we did lots of other shows after that with the same sort of format, and that we wrote a stupid story, usually with some terrible Bond villain who was going to do some humorous crime, like pull the plug out of the bottom of Lake City Car yes. and all the whatever, and which doesn't exist.
It sounds
and
a bit like Go-Jetters.
Lake Tanganyika.
It sounds. Have you seen Go-Jetters? The show Go-Jetters.
Go-Jetters. Yeah. Go. I could. Yeah. It's my favourite kids show.
Me too.
Theme tune.
Me and my daughter sing it together, and it's one of my happiest things.
All around the world. Yeah.
Can you do the whole thing? Because I probably can. Can you do it from the start?
Not on my own. No, I don't know the word. I don't know if I know the words of the verse.
Zuli is the pilot with the power and the speed. Kai and so fantastic, give gymnastics what you need. Lars is the mechanic, super nifty with his hands. Foz is the... has the answer to Grandmaster Glitch's plans. Outside the world is turning. Guided by Uber. Now, I want to know. I tried to... It says...
They don't sing that.
No, it says... It says outside the... It introduces all the characters.
Yeah.
Then it says outside the world is turning.
Yeah.
Which is there to rhyme later on with learning. But it says outside the world is turning, guided by Ubercorn. Does that mean that Ubercorn is responsible for the world turning? Is he a sort of god figure? Outside the world is turning, guided by Ubercorn.
Well,
four heroes always learning. There's just so much to explore. So jump on board! Then it goes to Go-Jetters.
I've never really
my daughter can't do the rest of it.
I've never really watched the show.
It's fucking great.
But I like the tune. Yeah.
Well, what Grandmaster Glitch?
It's great that you've memorized
Grandmaster
the
Glitch does. I'm trying to impress my daughter. It's one of the
That's
things.
That's a noble
I do.
Thing Thank to you. Want to do.
She doesn't really understand English enough to know I'm getting it right. But she goes go 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 go. She does that while I'm singing it. It's nice.
She sounds like an idiot.
Yeah. If you'd been a good dad to your kids,
maybe you would have memorised the lyrics.
Glug, glug,
to...
glug, 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 glug. That hadn't been all that. I didn't realise there's water left in that. Sorry.
I feel quite refreshed.
I think. You say you won't drink. I think drinking alone is the best kind of drinking, and I don't think it's a terrible thing to do.
I'm trying not to. Again, I'm aware that I'm not the only member of the family present in this room, and I am attempting not to drink alone.
It's
quite,
really wet. I'm
quite
sorry.
So
it's this is. I've never been so embarrassed since I was on This Week 3 days ago.
Drinking alone can be, but is it? Yeah, it's a strange definition of fun. But
well,
I think
just wipe yourself on the chair. We'll bring you a towel out. It was a lot. There's much more.
Bring
water.
Him the usual towel. When it gets, who had quarter nine? He always kicks off about this time.
I think getting back home. See, I work at night and I get home and everyone's asleep.
Yes.
And
so you have a wind down night.
I have a couple of whiskies on my own, and that's not bad.
No, I'm not telling anyone else what to do. I'm just saying.
In fact, it's really amazing.
Okay, I'm really happy.
And
for you.
I'm thinking of making a bottle of whiskey because two is so nice.
But why stop?
I think on your own, you actually social drink is worse because if social drinking, you're encouraged to drink more than you want to drink, maybe, or you end up drinking more than you thought you were going to drink. Whereas on your own, you kind of go, oh, I'm going to have two glasses of whiskey.
I think it gets to a certain stage, like whether it's two. I don't like whiskey, thank God. I don't like spirits, which is a blessing. But it gets to a certain number of, you know, Dave and I wrote a sketch. No, we didn't write it, actually. We did a sketch called The Inebriati, which was about there was this code of, you know, 1.5 drinks is lovely. It makes you feel terrific. But if you have two drinks, that's when things start to go wrong.
Yes.
And I don't know what, I wouldn't like to say what my number is, but beyond a certain number of beers, I don't want to stop drinking beer ever again.
Yeah.
So I have to sort of be a bit careful.
Just stop.
There's a word for it. which I don't use myself.
Yeah, okay. Just stop just before that number. Just stop before that number.
And everything
it's like
will be
me
fine.
And minstrels. That's what I'm like with minstrels. Got a real problem with those.
Yeah.
Yeah. And also beer. And... I know, you know, that's what. That's my advice to an alcoholic. Just have two drinks. On your own.
It's the best advice.
Enjoy them.
Really savour it. Savour that lovely, lovely, lovely taste of alcohol.
Then just stop.
And then just stop.
Till tomorrow, and then I've got two more tomorrow. It's not. It's just when everyone's asleep, Robert. You know, it's just nice to know there's no one's going to come and disturb you. That's the only good thing about being a stand-up comedian.
It's a very noisy job, and you want a bit of quiet afterwards.
Well, but also, your family are noisy, aren't they? So, like, just you come back at 1 o'clock in the morning, and everyone's asleep.
Are you now feeling a bit defensive because I've told you to stop drinking alone?
I don't, because you didn't tell me your book. Yes. I think you should drink on your own.
Thanks. Abby, I've just been told.
I think you should. Let's give it a go. See, come back in 10 years' time if you're still alive.
If I'm
not
wheeled on with a drip.
Oh. That might have been bad advice. I hope this isn't because of me.
Not at all. Press this button that releases more vodka into bloodstream.
I think that's what
those bags have got in them.
So did it go well, the innocent millions dead or dying, a wry look at the post-apocalyptic age with songs?
Yes, it did. Okay. Even though we just got back from Staples photocopying the handwritten script an hour before the show, but hadn't quite had time to learn any of the lines. But we came on miraculously in dressed as the right characters at the beginning of each scene. We didn't really know how to get to the end of that scene, but we sort of... But it was an 11 o'clock show and lots of drunk students, and they sort of liked us already from other stuff we'd done. So we got away with it, and we learned all the wrong lessons about... We always get away with it in the end.
Yeah.
But by the Saturday, by the end of the week, we were getting laughs for the right reasons.
Right.
Not as many. They weren't laughing as much at the deliberate jokes as they had done at all the fuck-ups.
Yes, yes.
But they were laughing deliberately.
Back in the 90s, did you do the show in Edinburgh, or was it just the student thing you did?
We did it eventually in Edinburgh, yeah.
Because back in the 90s, that is basically how I wrote my Edinburgh shows. I mean, we really were
It's amazing how people are previewing from fucking Christmas these days. And these young people fringe preparation and their slick professional shows that you actually don't resent paying for. No, leave an audience indignant, shortchanged and angry.
It was a better time.
It was
the 1990s.
Yeah.
And like, do you remember, were you in Edinburgh at the point where there were no colour posters? You would do a black and white
on a blue piece of paper or something. Who can afford colour posters? Sometimes you had two colours.
Two colours sometimes.
Yeah, but usually black and white. But a full colour poster was the stuff of Buck Rogers. But Avalon Act sometimes had full colour.
Someone sent me a picture of a leaflet of Rara Rasputin, which I did in 93, I want to say 92 or 93. And that was... brown and white, but with blue eyes, like the blue eyes, and the Rara Rasputin was in blue.
So two colours,
so
blue
two
and
colours,
brown.
Yeah. So that, and I was thinking, God, that was so. But that seems relatively recently, but yeah. So
yeah. No, all our posters were in black and white until 1999.
Wow. Okay. Just trying to think, 1999. What was my poster? Can't remember.
Oh well.
Oh well. Let's end it there.
And on that note.
In fact, let's cut all the rest of the podcast.
Robert Webb! And then, oh well. There's a story of my life.
Oh dear. So what are you working on that you've got to go and rush off?
I've got to go and...
Is it more movie mistakes?
It is not more movie mistakes. We made a new sitcom. David Mitchell and I are in a new show called Back, which for Channel 4, which will be out in September, and it's really good. It's written by Simon Blackwell, who wrote for Veep and also wrote a couple of episodes of Peep Show. So it's going to be dead good, and we've finished doing that. And then the rest of my life from now till November is bollocking on about that book in various theatres around the country.
Good. Well, do go and see him bollocking on about it, and do buy the book. It's really good. You can read it in a day if you're a brilliant reader like I am. I can read proper words.
You can read it in 3 hours if you're used to reading.
If you skip a bit, you got to skip a bit.
Oh, no, my dead mum, I skipped this bit. Oh, I skipped the fucking... Oh, no, it was really tough.
When's he going to talk about Peep Show?
Where's the fucking celebs?
Hey, it's very good, but do buy it. Ladies and gentlemen, it's Robert Webb.
Thank you.
You have been listening to Rich Sharing's Leicester Square Theatre podcast with me, Rich Sharing, and my guest, Robert Webb from Robert's Web. And the music is a mighty mess. It's a Go Faster Strike thing. Thanks to all of them. Thanks to everyone at the Leicester Square Theatre. Thanks to everyone at the British Comedy Guide. My producer is called Ben Walker. It's a Go Faster Strike.com Buzz and Sky Potato production. Thanks for listening. Head to gofasterstripe.com. You can find out about stuff that you can buy to help the podcast and to help me stay alive. And also go to richchang.com/gigs to find out if I'm doing my new show anywhere near you soon. Thanks for listening. Go away. Goodbye.
On Formative, middle school kids from New York City public schools interview a phenomenal collection of grown-ups.
Me, like, I don't know what I want to do.
You don't have to have all the answers.
I feel like a lot of people's favorite topics are, like, interest in their life.
That is a really good answer.
The podcast where the leaders of today are interviewed by leaders of tomorrow. Listen now at newyorkedge.org/formative or wherever you get your podcasts.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. quince.com/style.
Thanks for listening. Go to gofasterstripe.com for all your Rich Herring download and book needs. Go to richherring.com/gigs to find out if Can I Have My Ball Back is coming near to you. And please listen to as many podcasts on this feed as you possibly can and make your family and friends and children and strangers, make them listen too. Do get consent from everyone before you make them listen, though. All right, thanks for listening. Go and listen to another one. Bye-bye.